Good morning, everyone. We're reading in Book 1. Last week we completed our study of Canto 4, The Secret Knowledge. And now we come to Canto 5 on page 74, The Yoga of the King, The Yoga of the Spirit's Freedom and Greatness. This is the second canto that has the title, The Yoga of the King. Canto 3 also has that title, and that tells about the yoga of the soul's release, how Asvapati's soul, by the action of the Mother of Wisdom, becomes free, and his mind and body's first spiritual change comes about, the first transformation. And then comes Canto 4, in which Sri Aurobindo shares with us the secret knowledge which King Asvapati gains as a result of that release of his soul. In these seven marvelous sections, he shows us different aspects of the secret knowledge which underlies all the rest of the poem. And at the end, he tells us what is the purpose in this evolution, the purpose in the Mighty Mother's game. This ever she meant, since the first dawn of life, this constant will she covered with her sport, to evoke a person in the impersonal void, with the truth light strike Earth's massive roots of trance, wake a dumb self in the inconscient depths, and raise a lost power from its python sleep, that the eyes of the timeless might look out from time and the world manifest the unveiled divine. For this he left his white infinity and laid on the spirit the burden of the flesh, that Godhead's seed might flower in mindless space. So having shared this knowledge with us, the knowledge that King Asvapati has gained, the narrative continues. Another step, another stage in King Asvapati's yoga, the yoga of the spirit's freedom and greatness. This canto also has seven quite fairly short sections. It covers 25 pages. I think we can start by reading the first two of these sections, starting on page 74. Will you start, Dana?
The body's roots bound not the spirit's bodies. When life had stopped its peaks, death broke not in him. He dared to live when breath and thought were still. Thus put into that magic place, which few can even glimpse with hurried glance. Lifted for a moment from mind's labored words and the poverty of all that the gods have learned is their self-known. They, in a hidden chamber, closed and new, or kept the record graphs of the cosmic scribe, there the tables of the sacred law. There is the book of Beings, index page, the text and glossary of the Vedic truth or there. The rhythms and meters of the stars, significant of the moments of our fate, the simple powers of number and of form, and the secret code of the history of the world, and nature's correspondence with the soul, are written in the mystic art of life.
Thank you, Poona.
In the glow of the spirit's room of memories, he could recover the luminous marginal notes, dotting with light the crabbed, ambiguous scrawl, rescue the preamble, and the saving clause of the dark agreement by which all is ruled, that rises from material nature's sleep to cloth the everlasting in new shapes. He could reread now and interpret new its strange symbol letters scattered on stills signs, resolve its oracle and its paradox, its riddling phrases and its blindfold terms. The deep oxymoron of its truths, repliques, and recognize as a just necessity its hard conditions for the mighty work, nature's impossible Herculean toil. Only her warlock wise craft could enforce its law of the opposition of the gods, its list of inseparable contraries. The dumb great mother in her cosmic trance, exploiting for creation's joy and pain, infinity is sanction to the birth of form, accepts indomitably to execute the will to know in an inconscient world, the will to live under a reign of death, the thirst for rapture in a heart of flesh, and works out through the appearance of a soul by a miraculous birth in plus and gas. The mystery of God's covenant with the night.
Thank you, Ravi.
Once more was heard in the still cosmic mind the eternal's promise in force, including the world passion to begin, the cry of birth into mortality, and the opening word of the tragedy of time. Out of the depths, the world's buried secret road, he read the original
UKS.
He read the original UKs kept back in the locked archives of the spirit's crypt, and saw the signature and fairy seal of wisdom on the dim powers who did work, who builds in ignorance the states of light, a sleeping deity opens deathless eyes. He saw the unshaped thought in soulless form, new matter pregnant with spiritual sense. Mind dare the story of the unknowable, life is
gestation.
Life is gestation of the golden child. In the light, folding thoughts, blank vacancy, interpreting the universe by soul signs, he read from within the text of the without. The riddle grew plain and lost its catch obscure. larger luster lit the mighty page of purple mingled with the winds of time. A meaning made the stumbling pace of chance and fate revealed a chain of sea will. A conscious wideness filled the world dumb space. The void is saw toned, the omniscient supreme.
Thank you.
A will, a hope immense now seized his heart, and to discern the superhuman's form, he raised his eyes to unseen spiritual heights, aspiring to bring down a greater world. The glory he had glimpsed must be his home. A brighter, heavenlier sun must soon illume this dusk room with its dark internal stare. The infant soul in its small nursery school made objects meant for a lesson hardly learned outgrow its early grammar of intellect and its imitation of Earth's nature's art. Its earthly dialect to God language change in living symbols, study reality and learn the logic of the infant. The ideal in nature's common truth, the body illumined with the indwelling God, the heart and mind fill one with all that is. A conscious soul live in a conscious world, as through a mist of sovereign peak is seen the greatness of the eternal spirit, exiled in a fragmented universe amid half semblances of diviner things. These now could serve no more of his regal term. The immortal's pride refused the doom to live, either of the scanty bargain made between our littleness and bounded hopes and the compassionate infinitudes. His height repelled the lowness of Earth's state, a wideness discontented with its frame, resolved from poor ascent to nature's terms, the harsh contract and the diminished.
Thank you.
Only beginnings, our base matter seems alone complete, an absolute machine without a soul. All seems a misfit of half ideas. Are we saddled with the vice of earthly form, a hurried imperfect glimpse of heavenly things, guesses and travesties of celestial times. Here chaos sorts itself into a world, a reformation drifting in the void. Apings of knowledge, unfinished arcs of power, flamings of beauty into earthly shape. Love's broken reflexes of unity swim, fragment mirror rings of a floating sun, a packed assemblage of poor and tentative lives are pieced into a tessellated whole. There is no perfect answer to our hopes. There are blind, voiceless doors that have no key. Thought climbs in vain and brings the borrowed light. Cheated by counterfeits, sold to us in life's mart. Our hearts clutch at the forfeited heavenly bliss. There is a provender for the mind's satiety. There are thrills of the flesh, but not the soul's desire.
Thank you. So, Tanya.
Here the eyes rapture, time can be, is a new cry. On a mutilated tissue of stress, a wounded happiness that cannot be, a deep felicity of mind or self, thrown by the warm fall to her body's aid, or a similar crumb of impulse delight in the
seralios.
Change draws heavenly weight on every cosmos form. In his success, the seed of ill love, he saw the doubtfulness of all his years. The instinct of man's strong, confident thought, transience of the achievement of his hopes, a thinking being in an unthinking world, an island in the sea of the unknown, he is a smallness trying to be a great, an animal with some instinct of the God. His life a story, too funny to be a fool. His deed a number summing up to love, his consciousness a close lead to the place, his hope a star above the present and great. A greater destiny may be his, but the eternal sleep is his truth. He can recreate himself and all around, and fashion anew the world in which he lives. He, ignoring, is the Noah beyond time. He is the self above nature, above faith.
Thank you. So two sections, two introductory sections. The first one is in a way a kind of summary of the secret knowledge, a resume of the secret knowledge that is given in the previous canto. But on that secret knowledge, King Aswapati builds a new perception, and that is introduced in the second section. So let's read through again and look at these lines in more detail. Mihong.
Canto 5, the yoga of the king, the yoga of the street, freedom and greatness. This knowledge first he had of time-born men, admitted through a curtain of right mind that hangs between our thoughts and absolute sight. He found the occult cave, the mystic dome, near to the way of vision. And entered where the wings of glory flew, in the silent space where all is forever known, indifferent to doubt and to grief, a beat of the naked wears single shock. He showed the cord of mind that ties the earth heart and cast away the yoke of matter's load.
Let's pause there. So in the very first line, Shobindo tells us that Aswapati was the first human being, the first of time-born men to have this secret knowledge, which has been described in the previous canto. This corresponds to Shobindo's placing of this whole story of Savitri way, way back in the dawns of human history. This knowledge first he had of time-born men. And how did he gain this knowledge? He's admitted through a curtain of bright mind. He's allowed to pass through this veil, this curtain of mind that hangs between our surface thoughts and the absolute sight of the Spirit. And passing through that curtain, he found the door, the hidden cave within, the mystic door, near to the well of vision in the soul. It's quite a concrete picture, no? There's a veil, and he passes through, and there's a cave, there's a door, and nearby there's a well from which one can drink deep of the power of vision. This is the cave where the soul dwells, and he's able to enter that cave where the wings of glory brood in the silent space where all is forever known.
Question.
Yes.
What does time born
means? Born in time or born from time. That means in the manifestation.
Make a distinction from eternal.
Yes, yeah, in the manifestation of men, human beings born in time, He was the first one to have this secret knowledge. The Vedic tradition speaks of those forefathers, you know, who discovered this knowledge. So Sri Aurobindo places Asvapati there as the first of the rishis.
Is it the same one in Gita? Krishna refers to Manu. First, he has given the knowledge to Manu.
He has given the laws, no?
Yes.
Manu. Hmm? Anyway, we can look up in the dictionaries, the Puranic dictionary and other dictionaries of the find out more about these figures. But for this story, for this purpose, Sri Aurobindo is giving a special significance, no, to Asvapati, as he gives a special significance to Savitri, that she takes this incarnation to open up the possibility of immortality for human beings. At the very beginnings of earth history, human history. And it says that entering into that space there, Asvapati is avid, he's eager for the shock, to have the touch of the naked real, of reality without disguise or covering, fully revealed. And in order to achieve that single shock of real reality, he cuts the cord of mind that ties the earth heart. There's a nice talk of Nalini Kanta Gupta where he speaks about the triple cord of mind which ties us human beings to our earthly existence. No? So Asvapati cuts that cord. He's not tied anymore. And he cast away the yoke, that yoke which binds us to matter. He throws it off. He cast away the yoke of matter's law. Yes, in that original space, that immense void which is at the beginning, there's no matter or life or mind. And into that mindless, unconscious space, he's planting the possibility of the full development and manifestation of the divine being and the divine life in that mindless space, that emptiness, before anything was manifested. Short, to cut, yes. From the verb, the word to shear. You have shears. No, I don't think so. But it's very interesting that, well, we look what the next sentence says. Mother has commented on this next sentence. Would you read, please, Jean-Yves?
The body's rules bound not the spirit's power. When life has stopped its beats, death broke not in. He dared to live when breath and soul were still. Thus will he step into that magic place, which few can even glimpse, with heavy glance, lifted for a moment from mind's labored work. And the poverty of nature's earthly side.
So this is a yogic achievement, no? That the laws of matter, the laws binding the physical body, are cast away, so that the body's rules no longer bound the power of the spirit. This is the spirit's freedom. And it says, when life had stopped its breath, death broke not in. No? So the heart has stopped beating. No?
His physical heart stopped beating, he there to basically...
That's what it is, yes. Yes. The breathing stopped also. And Mother commented that Sri Aurobindo must have done this, otherwise he's not... Here he's describing it.
That against a very physical law,
Yes.
The heart starts beating and then...
The body, when the spirit is really free and can free itself from the rules of the body, it can keep the body intact and be free of it and then enter back into it when necessary. This is one of the goals of of yoga.
Like when Shyamendra also left his body.
Who?
When Shyamendra left his body, for 2-3 days that the vibration all...
Yeah, that was something he had brought down into matter. No? But... So this enables him, his spirit, to step into this magic place, Amitoj. Line 15, thus could he step. This is a special realm of the subtle physical, where all these records are kept. I think in Mother's illustration she's shown something like a library with scrolls, no? And she told Huta that it's possible to go there and find out anything that you want to know about the past or the future or what's going on anywhere. No? That's this hidden chamber. It's closed, it doesn't advertise itself, but that's where the record graphs of the cosmic scribe are kept. There's somebody keeping a record all the time. Everything is being recorded. And among the things that are being recorded, there are the tables, the tablets on which the sacred law is written. And there's the index page of the book of being, the book of existence. The index page is where all the contents are, no? So you can find your way around the book. And there's the text of the Vedic truth and also the glossary. The glossary comes sometimes at the back of a book that's full of strange terms. They get explained at the back. And there's the record also of the rhythms and meters of the stars, significant of the movements of our fate. Here it's interesting that Sri Aurobindo justifies the science of astrology. In his early times in Pondi, he started to write a book on that. Parts of it, or first part of it, is available, I think. So there is some truth in this belief that the rhythms and meters of the stars correspond in some way. They are meaningful in connection with the movements of our fate. And then all these symbol powers of number and of form, the mathematics of the infinite that's underlying the forms of the world, the secret code of the history of the world. The whole history is there, but it's written in code. You have to know how to be able to read it. And also kept there is the whole correspondence between nature and the soul. It has a double meaning. Of course, it's as if they are communicating with each other, writing letters backwards and forwards. But it also means the way that the actions of nature are corresponding to, reflecting and connected with the movements of the soul. This is one of the things that we read the other day on our first reading in Essays on the Gita, that this whole manifestation is the outcome of this communication, this correspondence between the supreme nature and this lower nature. There's a correspondence that gives meaning to everything here. So all these things are written there in that secret place, that chamber, hidden chamber, in the mystic heart of life.
Can you please clarify? In the beginning he says that the first man, and there here he refers to Vedic truth. Is the first man during the Vedic time?
I think the Vedic truth is the essential reality, no? Which has got discovered. Maybe he seems to be one of the first who discovered that Vedic truth. The truth itself is pre-existent before any human beings discover it. Yeah? I think must be like that. Avid means eager, keen to experience that single shock. It's a unique contact with naked reality, with the underlying reality, absolutely as it is, without any covering or a veil or disguise.
By the word shock.
It must be quite a shock, no? It's not just a simple, gentle contact. It's something very powerful.
I'm wondering, he's so evolved. What about Savitri's mother?
The queen.
Her consciousness.
That is very nicely described at the beginning of book 6. I won't go into it now. Sri Aurobindo has introduced her into the story. She's not there. I mean, of course, she's there, but she's not a character in the original legend. But he has introduced her to give expression to all our doubts and questions in book 6. And she expresses them very, very clearly. And then Narad answers. But the way that she's described is very nice.
Is she represent the ordinary human consciousness?
Sorry?
Is she represent the ordinary human consciousness?
Well, he says not exactly ordinary. She's an ancient Indian aristocrat. She's had a certain upbringing and she has reached a certain level. She's a queen and she's Asvapati's queen. She's his consort. So she is a special being. But he says she allows herself to fall to the level of human mind and to express all our doubts. Yes.
1 to 12.
Yes.
Describe pages the significance of number.
Yes.
It's very, very interesting.
We can all feel that each of these numbers has a significance, no?
Yes.
It's very nice that
1965-66. I don't remember exactly, but I put many times in the news.
Yes, well, everything is recorded there, the whole history of the world, of the planet, the universe, but it's recorded in code. It is not something that we can just open the book and read. One has to have a special knowledge to be able to decode that history. There's some passages in the record of yoga which are very interesting from that point of view, that Sri Aurobindo seems to have been shown significant episodes in the far back history of humanity that are not recorded anywhere except here in this this hidden chamber.
This line 20, this hidden chamber closed and mute. I heard once that some people believe there is a chamber under the feet of the Sphinx. So the mother was so involved in the Egyptian civilization, I thought, I wonder if ever they'll discover that there's a... Because
there's the idea that beneath every really sacred place, there's a hidden chamber, where the secret of secrets is kept there. But this is obviously something within the being. He has he's broken free, his spirit is no longer bound by the body's rules, and so it can step into that space that's an akashic or etheric space where all this is recorded. Would you like to read, Mom? Ram Narayan.
In the girl, the spirit's loom of memories, he could recover the luminous marginal notes, dotting with light the crabbed, ambiguous scrawl, rescue the preamble and the saving clause of the dark agreement by which all is ruled, that rises from material nature's sleep to glow. He could reread now and interpret new its strange symbol letters, scattered of crucial signs, resolve its oracle and its paradox, its simple phrases and its blindfold terms, the deep oxymoron of its truths reflects and recognize as a just necessity its hard conditions for a mighty world. Nature's impossible Herculean toil, only her warlock wisecraft could enforce its law of the opposition of the gods, its list of inseparable contracts.
Yes. So in addition to all those other things he finds in that room, here Sri Aurobindo calls it the spirit's room of memories. The spirit has experienced all these things, and that's where the memories are stored. He, Aswapati, finds a kind of legal document, an agreement. And that's the agreement by which everything is ruled that rises from the material sleep of the material nature's sleep, the sleep of the inconscient. Everything that's emerged in evolution is ruled by this dark agreement. But he is able to recover some notes that have been written in the margins, luminous marginal notes, dotting with light the crabbed, ambiguous scroll. So that agreement is in the form of a scroll. It's written in crabbed letters that are very difficult to read.
Like Sri Aurobindo's handwriting?
No, not even more than that. They used to write with very thick pen nibs, you know, so the letters are very thick, black. And you can't, it's difficult sometimes to tell one from the other. Well, Sri Aurobindo, of course, wrote with a fountain pen, and wasn't quite so difficult, but crabbed letters. They're also compressed. I think it's because parchment, the material they were writing on, was something so, so much of a luxury that they squashed their letters very small to fit as many onto a line as possible. At least I've heard that explanation recently. So there are marginal notes here and there. They shine with light. And he could also rescue the preamble. The preamble is a text that goes at the beginning of a legal document, which defines its purpose. What is this document for? And then at the end, you may get a saving clause which describes the conditions under which the agreement doesn't apply. So there's not only the agreement itself, there's the notes, the explanatory notes and the margins. There's the preamble at the beginning, which casts some light on its intentions. And there's the saving clause at the end, which explains all the exceptions to the agreement. Well, he's going to explain now why it's dark. No, it's dark in the sense that it's difficult to understand, and it also seems to impose very difficult conditions on everything that rises from nature's sleep. But he's able to reread that agreement and interpret it in a new way, its strange symbol letters and those scattered abstruse signs. Abstruse also means they have a very complex meaning that's difficult to understand. So he could resolve its oracle. An oracle is an answer to a question, even a divine answer to a question. But it's often expressed in a very mysterious way that's difficult to understand. But he can solve that riddle, that he could resolve the oracle of that agreement. And its paradox, the contradictoriness of it, seems to contradict itself. It's riddling phrases. The phrases, they even seem to be written deliberately in a way that's difficult to understand. And it's blindfold terms. They're put there to mislead you. And the deep oxymoron of its truths, repliques. Repliques are statements in the form of a statement and an answering statement, or a question and an answer. Something is said, something else completes it. But he says these repliques of truth, they come in the form of oxymorons. That's contradictory expressions, like hot ice or, I don't know, various things like that. Contradictory oxymorons. So these repliques, these complementary statements, they seem to contradict each other. But he can understand all that. And when he resolves all that mystery, he's able to recognize as a just necessity the hard conditions of that dark agreement, that they're absolutely necessary for the mighty work that nature has taken up. It's an impossible Herculean toil from the Greek hero Hercules, who had to perform 12 apparently impossible labors. But he did it. Nature has undertaken a toil like that, apparently impossible. In fact, it is impossible. Only her warlock wisecraft could enforce those conditions of that toil. A warlock is a magician, an enchanter, and wisecraft is the knowledge, the magical secret knowledge of a great occultist, an enchanter. This agreement expresses the law of the opposition of the gods, how the cosmic powers represent opposing forces and possibilities, and its list of inseparable contraries, contradictory things like dark and light, hot and cold, left and right, north and south. Our world seems to be made up of a list of inseparable contraries, this world of dualities.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes, this is what Sri Aurobindo has done. He's recovered all this knowledge and reinterpreted it in a way that's accessible to the mind of modern human beings. He has written about that in 1912, that this was part of his mission, that he's recovering for himself all this knowledge, but he feels he has to express that, reinterpret it anew in a way that's accessible to. Yes. Right. Yes. Yes. That's what he's done. He's gone back and revealed the essential meaning. Thera. Thank you. So this is what Asvapati recognizes, the work, the impossible Herculean toil that the Great Mother is doing in her role as material nature, in her cosmic trance. She is making use of infinity's sanction to the birth of form. Infinity and form are in a way contradictory. Forms are finite, but if the original infinity has said yes, let there be form. And that's what she is making use of. The Lord has said yes. And she's making use of it for all the joy and pain of creation, all the experience that's possible. So she's accepted this task indomitably. She can't be conquered or discouraged. Full of courage and determination, she won't let anything deter her from executing this task of opposites, of reconciling opposites, of manifesting in this inconscient world of matter the will to know, to become conscious. In this world of matter, there's a continuous death and rebirth going on of forms. No? So what she's executing is the will to live under this reign of death. And then this physical heart, which is also just living matter, there's a thirst in it for rapture, for ecstasy, for bliss. She wants to fulfill that. She works out through the appearance of a soul, something that is not physical, that is spirit. This soul is born in plasm, in primitive matter, and in gas. She's working out the mystery of God's covenant with the night. This dark agreement, it's a covenant, a contract, a promise. She works it out through this appearance of soul in the material world.
God's covenant with the night is to bring the light and a divine form out of the inconscience.
Out of the inconscience, the divine life, yeah. Shall we read one more?
Yeah, yes. The word indomitable.
I think it means, what does Rand Hicks say? I would say it means we'll not admit defeat. Oh. So we'll go on fighting.
Right.
Yes. It will not accept defeat.
Now, if I'm dominated, indomitable, it's indomitable. You can't power over it.
Oh, you can't overpower it.
You can't overpower it. That's the right translation of indomitable.
The opposite of dominance.
Yeah, you can't dominate. You can't sit on it.
Yes, let's read one more. Where are we? Helmut. What does it say?
That cannot be overcome or defeated.
Okay, there we are. Thank you. Good for Rand Hicks. Helmut.
Once more was heard in the still constant mind the eternal promise of his laboring force. Inducing the world passion within him, describe of birth and mortality, and the opening verse of the tragedy of time. Out of the depth, the world's buried secret goes. He read the original Mikas, kept back and the lost.
What's the correct pronunciation?
Ukas.
Ukas. Thank you. It's a Russian word. Ukas. Yes, please go on, Helmut. Right. So there's this mystery of God's covenant with the night. And Aswapati hears that covenant, that promise, once more was heard in the still cosmic mind, the eternal's promise to his laboring force. And it's that promise which induces the world passion to begin, this passion play of the adventure of consciousness and unconsciousness. It's that promise which is reflected in the cry of birth into mortality. And that promise is the opening verse of the tragedy of time, this great tragic drama. The Eternal's promise has set all this off. His promise to his conscious force that works in nature's breast. So when he hears that, he sees the world's buried secret rising up out of the depths, and he's able to read the original ukas that's kept back, secrets that's kept somewhere, it's not revealed in the locked archives of the spirit script. That was the original command. Ukas, it means an order, a command, yeah. Yes, it's the command of the ruler, yes. No, only the emperor, yes. Only the lord, yes. And then he puts his signature. He gives the ukas, and then he puts his signature and he puts his seal, his mark of wisdom on this work which the dim power, the darkened nature is doing in secret, hooded. She's building in ignorance the steps of light. A sleeping deity opened deathless eyes. Mother describes how she had a vision going deep, deep down into the inconscient, into the ocean of the inconscient, and seeing there a source of light, and moving towards that light She came to a cave deep down, and the light was coming from a being who was sleeping there. She has drawn a picture of this being for Huta as an illustration to a line in Book 1, Canto 1. She's told about seeing that being she considered as the first avatar, a spirit sleeping in matter. But in the agenda somewhere, she describes to Supreme that when she stood at the mouth of the cave and looked at the being, it opened its eyes.
Yes.
So she said that's the inconscient becoming conscious.
It's very attestive experience of the mother.
Yes, that's what nature is secretly doing. Starting from the inconscient, she's allowing consciousness, light, to emerge, step by step, stage by stage. And at the moment we're in this twilight stage of ignorance. There's some light, but not much. But she's preparing all these steps of light, which we shall ascend gradually. We ought to stop there. Shall we leave it there for today? Shall we listen to Mother reading some of these lines? Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.